Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. My goal is to help you wake up and think about your day, not your diet. And even if you think it is impossible to stop obsessing about food and stop being preoccupied about every bite, let me tell you, in the words of the great Nelson Mandela, it is only impossible until it is done. So if you would like to join me here in the studio, the number is 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what is weighing on you and what is eating at you, because it is not what you are eating that is the problem, the real root problem. It is what's eating at you. And that's what we're here to identify and process. So welcome. Please join the show. Be part of it. Call in and let's see if we can resolve what's going on so you can start transforming your relationship to food. Okay, so here's something I hear all the time, that people are trying to positive think their way into feeling better. They tell themselves positive mantras. Positive mantras do not work. Well, actually, let me amend that. The only way that positivity and those sort of, you know, looking in the mirror and saying, I am beautiful and lovable, the only way that is going to work is if you process the part of you that thinks you are not beautiful and not lovable and all of that. On its own, positive thinking does not work. In fact, it often backfires. So here's the thing. Positive thinking makes you feel worse, not better, because you're telling yourself all these positive things, you're saying your mantras, you're doing it diligently, and you still feel the same. And you probably don't think, wow, you know, this positive thinking isn't working. You might be thinking something along the lines of, what's wrong with me that this isn't working? This works for other people, or so they say. This works for everyone. What's wrong with me? I'm doing it wrong. And then you feel bad. And then, boom, you are more vulnerable to using food for comfort, escape, distraction, and so forth. So here's an example of a true story. I have shared it before. If you've listened to the show, I think I said it like 2 years ago. But for those of you who haven't heard it, it'll be new to you. For those of you who have heard it, sometimes it helps to hear things repeatedly. That's what therapy is all about, repetition till you change the way that you experience yourself in the world. So this is based on my grandmother Betty's life. So just a few weeks after her wedding to Roger, a drunk driver ran a red light and struck them in the crosswalk. They were in Manhattan. They were walking across the street. They'd just been married, second marriage. Her first husband, my grandfather, my mother's father, had died early. And she finally found love again, was a newlywed, crossing a street in Manhattan, and a drunk driver runs a light and hits them in the crosswalk. Roger is killed instantly. Betty's spine is broken. Doctors do not expect her to ever walk again. Well, guess what? My grandmother had grit. I mean, she came over here from Russia. This is a woman who came over here from Russia when she was 15 and was told, okay, you don't speak English, so we're putting you in kindergarten. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm 15 years old, not five. I'm not going into kindergarten. And they said, well, when you learn English, you can be in high school with your peers. My grandmother learned English in approximately 3 months. So this is a woman with grit, okay? So she decides she's going to prove the doctors wrong. And she worked hard for months. This is back when you could be in the hospital for months. And she walked out of the hospital on crutches. And during the next weeks, some of her very well-meaning friends urged her to stay positive. They'd say things like, you know, you're lucky to be alive. Just focus on your new life. Don't think about the past. Focus on the good, not the bad. You survived. They said you'd never walk again. You're walking. This is amazing. Focus on the positive. Stay positive. A friend came over for coffee and said, oh, how wonderful to see you walking up and around. My grandmother, who, by the way, I don't even know how she passed, where my genes come from. I'm 5'7". She was like a 4'11 and called herself 5 feet her whole life. She's like this little tiny woman. She's walking around the kitchen, getting coffee, probably limping around the kitchen. And her friend's like, oh, my God, it's a miracle. And my grandmother, they're having coffee and coffee cake. And my grandmother eats a slice of coffee cake. Then she eats another slice of coffee cake. And finally, she puts down her fork and she bursts into tears. And she says, it's no good. I can't stay positive. I can't stop thinking about Roger, my husband of, you know, just mere weeks before he was killed. And her friend says, look on the bright side. It could have been worse. We could have lost you too. Oops. I'm going to hold this thought because we have a caller. Hi, Nicole. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dr. Nina. Thank you. I know you're in the middle of your story, but I'm not going to be able to call in and ask a question later. So is it okay if I ask now?
Absolutely fine. I will finish my story later.
Okay. I have a coffee cake. I heard that thing and then I called.
Okay.
So I found it recently. Like, when I tell myself, like, Nicole, don't eat, or, like, there's a certain food, and I don't know if this is anticipation of deprivation, but whenever I tell myself don't eat, like, I want to eat more, or anytime I, like, fixate on a certain food, it makes me want it more, and I don't know how to get out of this cycle, because I know that I'm wanting it more because I'm telling myself not to have it, but I can't. I feel like it's a cycle. I don't know what to do. I can't stop telling myself not to have it.
Why?
I don't know. Because, I need help.
Okay. I'm here to help. Here I am. Okay. So first of all, you answered your question. It is indeed the anticipation of deprivation, or the actual, in your case, deprivation, that makes you want the thing that you can't have. We're human beings. We want the thing we can't have. It's like, you know, you have no interest in... I'm trying to think. You have no interest in drinking water. And then someone, I just said that because I'm looking at my bottle of water. You have no interest in drinking water. You don't want to drink water. And then someone says, you can't drink water. What do you think you're going to want to do?
Right.
Drink water.
You're going to want to drink the water. Yeah,
human nature. So, yes, it's that sort of I want what I can't have element of human nature. So you answered that part of your question. But that's on the more about the surface. But if we dig deeper, do some emotional gardening to the root, why are you setting yourself up to think about what you should or shouldn't eat? What would you be thinking about if you couldn't do that, if you wouldn't do that? What would be on your mind if you weren't thinking about food?
I know. I guess, like, I don't know, work, dating, like other things.
Okay.
But I feel like food is something I think about a lot. You know that.
Well, yes, because it keeps you from work, dating, life. Well, the first thing you said was work. Work, dating, life.
So it's like a distraction. It's the way I like distract myself.
Yes.
From things I don't want to think about.
Yes. Why don't you want to think of, so work, what is it you don't want to think about?
I mean, I think about work a lot. I guess work is stressful. Like, who likes work? I mean, I like work. I mean, I like work, but I guess I rather think about other things. I don't know.
Well, what is it about work you don't like? Or what is it about dating that's causing anxiety? See, if you're...
Yeah, I guess all this is stressful. But food is stressful, too. It's all stressful.
Yeah, but food is... But the stress... So perhaps you are displacing the stress of work or dating, which may have to do with other people and other situations that you can't do anything about. They're just going to do what they're going to do or think what they're going to think. You're just displacing that onto food. So instead of you and some random situation or person, now it's between you and you, you and food.
Right. And I think I'm also going to answer my own question in this sense, is that it's something that I can control. Food is something I can control, but the other things like dating and work, like I can't control the other side of it.
Exactly.
So does that have something to do with it too?
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that's what you just said, right?
Yes, that's what I just said. But you know, you put it very in a very user friendly way. Yes, food is something that you can control, whereas you cannot control other aspects of life. And so it gives you it's taking the same dynamic, the same situation, which is it's a struggle, and now you're just feeling bad about yourself instead of, well, maybe what would you be feeling frustrated with or bad about or whatever you're feeling with food? What would you be feeling if that was about another situation or person? What is the stress?
I guess like disappointment, maybe.
Okay.
Disappointment, frustration, annoyance.
Ooh, there's a lot there.
Yeah.
Okay, so disappointment. What comes to mind when you think of disappointment?
What comes to mind?
Yeah.
I guess like trying super hard and not getting the results that I want.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. Is this making sense? Am I answering the question properly? Okay.
Well, there's no right or wrong answer or proper answer. It's just, what is your association to disappointment? So first it's like, oh my God, food, I can't stop.
Oh.
And then it's, oh wait, maybe there's something about that. Maybe there's something that's getting switched from something in life onto food. So what is the life situation? What is the life difficulty? And your mind went to disappointment, frustration, and annoyance. So, by the way, it's very noisy where you are.
Sorry, you're cutting out a little bit, Dr. Nina. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I was saying it was very okay. Noisy where you were, but now I don't hear noise.
Okay.
So the first thing that your mind went to, the first association you had, you said disappointment, frustration, annoyance.
Yeah.
So disappointment in working hard and not being acknowledged, working hard, not seeing the benefits. What else?
No, I do feel like I'm acknowledged. It's more like, I don't know, like dating, like trying super hard, going out with so many people, meeting a lot of good guys, but it like not really working out with anybody, like it not being a good match with anybody. I guess that's where like the disappointment and frustration comes in. And then with work, yeah, I guess I just feel like I have more potential and I have a lot to give and I don't know. It makes me think like, am I doing the right thing? I don't know. Is it disappointment in myself? I don't know.
Well, it sounds like you turn against yourself. So am I doing the right thing? Which on the one hand is a good question to ask yourself. You know, is this really what I want? Am I doing the right thing for myself? Am I making the right choices? But if you turn too much against yourself and blame yourself, then you just feel bad about yourself. Then you're going to start thinking about food rather than being able to support yourself. Yes, it is disappointing to go out with a lot of guys and they're all perfectly nice, but there's no ba-boom, you know, woo.
Yeah.
There's no umph.
Right.
There's no wow. You know, it takes a lot to meet that person.
Right.
And it's hard and it is disappointing and frustrating.
So what's the solution? What do I do? How do I keep those things separate, I guess? Like,
it's,
I don't know.
The solution, at least as far as dating goes, is to recognize, yeah, dating is hard. Dating is tough. And it's just a numbers game, ultimately. So the solution is just to be like, okay, I haven't met the right person. I'm just going to keep going. You got to kiss a lot of frogs before one of them turns into a prince. Without thinking, oh, I'm never going to find anyone. This is impossible.
Right.
There's something wrong with me. And then, you know, you go from disappointment to discouraged, which is fairly awful.
I don't feel discouraged. I just feel, like I said, disappointed.
That's good. Stay in disappointment.
Yeah.
And stay okay. in disappointment. Feel the disappointment and keep going.
Okay.
So like what I was saying earlier about positive thinking would be like, oh, and I'm slightly making fun of it. I don't really mean to mock positive thinking, but it's like, you know, I am a beautiful child of the universe and I will manifest my soulmate. Like, and then it doesn't happen.
Right, right.
And you're like, well, what's wrong with me? I'm not manifesting my soulmate.
Right.
But like, first you got to say, this is disappointing. This is really hard.
Right.
Why is this so hard?
Right.
You know, like Charlotte right. in Sex and the City. I've been dating since I was 15. You know, where is he?
Right.
I don't know if you're a fan of Sex and the City, but a moment that many women can relate to. Where is he?
Yeah.
So it's to feel both. It's to recognize both. Yeah, it's disappointing. And there is hope.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Dr. Nina. That's very helpful.
I'm very glad, and let me know how it goes.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay. Yeah, so often we try to ignore our disappointment or ignore our frustration or ignore how annoyed we are and then turn that on ourselves. So then instead of being disappointed or frustrated or annoyed about things that are going on in the world, it becomes, I'm so disappointed in myself that I couldn't stick to my diet. I'm so frustrated that I have no willpower. I'm so annoyed with myself because blah, blah, blah. And then all the feelings and reactions you have towards situations in the world get turned back to you, the boomerang effect, I call it. And then you feel bad. And then you're going to use food in some way to feel better. So back to my grandmother. Her friend, my grandmother's crying, right? She stopped eating coffee cake. Now she's crying into her coffee. And her friend says, look on the bright side. Look on the bright side. It could have been worse. We could have lost you too. And her friend just kept saying, you know, be positive. Just stay positive. And my grandmother said, I am positive. I'm positive I miss Roger. So what has this got to do with your relationship to food? If you dismiss your true thoughts, emotions, and reactions in favor of looking on the bright side, you're pushing away your truth. Your emotional reactions, your feelings, they're just your truth of the moment. And so if something bad happens, yeah, you know what, there may be a silver lining. I'm all for looking for the silver lining. But the bad thing still happened. And that needs to be acknowledged before you start saying, but the silver lining is, you know, yes, I lost my husband, but I'm still alive, does not really do it. It's like, I lost my husband, you know, my grandmother lost her husband, she's got to mourn her husband, she's got to mourn Roger before she could be, you know, grateful to be alive. So forget trying to stay positive when things are tough. The only way to get past challenges, the only way to get past losses in life, losses of life, you know, pain, frustration, upset, the only way to get past it is to deal with the bad stuff. You cannot positive think it away anymore that you can just drop it, ignore it, or stuff it down. The only way to get feelings, what I'm saying is essentially, the only way to get rid of bad feelings is to feel them, to express them, to process them. So my grandmother cried. She expressed her anger at a universe that could give her love and then snatch it away, cruelly, just yank it away from her. She felt her grief. She went through the process of grieving for a long time. And also, by the way, when her second husband died, it activated the sense of loss over her first husband, my grandfather, who I never met because he died when my mom was 16. And it took her a while to find love again. But so when now two husbands die, she feels the feelings of the loss of the first husband as well as the loss of the second husband. She's overwhelmed with grief and pain. But she processed it, she mourned it, and that's how she was finally able to get past the pain and say, I miss Roger so much. I miss him so much. And I'm glad to be alive and able to walk. Both are true. So instead of positive thinking, I recommend realistic thinking, balanced thinking. So instead of saying something like, you know, I gained 20 pounds after my breakup, but I shouldn't worry about such trivial things. I mean, I shouldn't worry about my weight, even though I do. I mean, people are starving in Africa. People are dying in wars. I have no right to be upset. Like, my life isn't so bad. This is a first world problem. I need to be more positive. That is not helpful. Instead, being balanced and realistic will be more helpful. That sounds like this. I gained 20 pounds after my breakup, and right now I feel powerless and out of control with food. It is really painful and upsetting and frustrating when my clothes feel so much tighter. Now I'm going to start paying attention to why I'm eating, to what's eating at me, so that I can reverse this trend. But in the meantime, oh, it sure is challenging. Yes, people in Africa are starving. Yes, people in the world have much worse problems than I do. People have cancer, people have disease, people have loss, people have all kinds of awful things that are perhaps more significant than gaining 20 pounds. But their pain does not minimize mine. Someone else's pain does not minimize your own. Your pain, your frustration, your feelings are yours. Doesn't matter how they are in comparison to anyone else's. They are yours. They need your attention, period. So maybe today, maybe after the show, at some point, think about a situation that's upsetting to you, something that's going on in your life, and use these steps to be, you know, have a balanced reaction. Acknowledge the bad and the silver lining. Be balanced and realistic. So acknowledge your experience. Validate your emotions, comfort yourself with words. Because when you acknowledge what you truly think and feel, even if it's painful or upsetting, that's how you deal with it. That's how you heal. But when you ignore it by staying positive, it's going to continue to eat at you. And that leads to stuffing down feelings and stuffing down, you know, whatever's uncomfortable symbolically with food or displacing it. Instead of being upset about the situation, now you're upset because you ate whatever. So that's why positive thinking does not help. Again, if you'd like to join the show, the number is 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what's going on in your life and, you know, let me know how I can help. Okay, another topic that comes up a lot is, and Nicole just referenced it, disappointment. Right? Disappointment is something that we all have to deal with. And disappointment can sound different for different people in different situations. But here's what disappointment can sound like. You know, I really thought things would change when I lost weight, and I'm really disappointed that things really haven't changed. Like, yes, I'm thinner. Yes, my clothes are smaller. But other than that, life is still sort of the same, and that's really disappointing. Or I really thought things would be better in this new job or in this new relationship or in this new city or whatever. I thought they would be better, and I'm really disappointed that once again I'm struggling. Another way to express disappointment is, ugh, I feel so stupid for thinking it would work out. Boy, am I an idiot to think that things could be better. That is bypassing disappointment completely, by the way, and attacking yourself for your failure to be psychic, right? I feel so stupid that things didn't work out. Oh, where is your crystal ball? How did you think that things would work out? Like, of course you thought things would work out. You did the best with your situation at the time. You can't know the future. Or similarly, I can't believe I trusted that person. So disappointed in that person. I'm disappointed in myself for trusting that person, right? So let me tell you about Carla. Again, all the names that I use on the show have been changed and things have been slightly altered to disguise the person I'm talking about. So Carla saved for years and years and years until she was able to buy a new house. And she spent months searching through real estate listings, going to open houses. Like, this was her second job. Her mission in life was to find the house that she could finally put the down payment on. And she did. She found her dream house. She was beyond excited the day she went into escrow. And then the deal totally fell apart. Seller was just a mess. Things were bad. Deal fell apart. Carla was devastated. She said that she felt so stupid for thinking that things would actually go her way. She couldn't believe that she let herself get that excited about the house. And she said she should have known better. And then she said, and this is not something that everyone says, but maybe it's more common thought than we realize. She said, stuff like this doesn't ever happen to my skinny friends. They never go through this kind of stuff. So what did Carla do? Instead of processing her disappointment that her dream house fell through the cracks, she turned against herself. She became disappointed with herself, calling herself stupid for even hoping that things could go her way. She berated herself for not knowing how they were going to turn out, for not being psychic, as if she somehow should have known that the deal would fall through. And then she imagined that skinny people don't suffer disappointment. Carla really believed that if she changed her weight and became one of those skinny people, she'd never be disappointed again. So she thought if she changed her life, if she changed her weight, she'd change her life. Right. And this is something I talk about almost every show because it's so common. If I change my weight, I'll change my life. And it is an illusion because you cannot change life situations by controlling your weight, even though we often think we can. Oh, my girlfriend broke up with me. Well, I'm going to get like a six pack and she's going to come back to me. Or my boyfriend broke up with me, or my girlfriend. Well, I'm going to lose weight and I'm going to get her back or him back. So the definition of disappointment is the feeling of sadness or displeasure caused by the non-fulfillment of one's hopes or expectations. Thank you, Google Dictionary. So disappointment can be about a person or it can be about a situation. And it's usually more acute and more painful and more difficult than just sadness or displeasure. What a word, right? Displeasure. Who uses that word except the dictionary? Anyway, there are many other elements bound up in the experience of disappointment. And that includes the idea of losing basic trust in others, losing basic trust in the world. If other people and other situations can be unpredictable or unreliable, you can use food, you can turn to food instead of turning to people. And that way you relate primarily to your body and to food instead of to the world. So focusing on your power over food, which you supposedly can control, can be preferable, can be easier than experiencing powerless in the context of your relationships or in things that are going on in your world. Easier, and I think this is what Nicole was saying, it's easier to be disappointed with yourself over what you ate than it is to be disappointed in a world that you cannot manage or control completely. So if you're disappointed in yourself for something that is food, weight, or body image related, you could be displacing feelings towards others, feelings towards other situations, and turning them against yourself. So what to do? What do you do? Think about this. What situations or people are disappointing you? What's going on in your life right now that is causing disappointment? Maybe a friend let you down. Maybe, like Nicole, you're dating up a storm and you haven't met anyone special. Maybe things just have not gone as planned in other areas of your life. And then ask yourself, what does it mean about you? Maybe it means, and this is really the most important part, maybe it means you're not good enough in your mind. Yeah, that somehow you should have known better. What is that? That's the idea that you failed to be omniscient, all-knowing, omnipotent, all-powerful. So if you feel like you're not good enough because you keep getting disappointed, if you keep becoming a disappointment rather than a person who's feeling disappointment, ask yourself, what does it mean to you? What does it mean about you? And what does it mean about other people? Because if you believe that other people are inherently better or inherently self-serving or that you can't trust them, they're going to throw you under that proverbial bus, then you may expect people to disappoint you. And again, people can be unreliable, unpredictable, and unavailable. But food is reliable, predictable, and available. So if you can't rely on people, you could be turning to food as a substitute. Now we go back even deep. We dig even deeper in this emotional gardening. Ask yourself where you learn to mistrust other people. What experiences, what memories, what thoughts come to mind when you consider the notion of mistrust? Because often we have some painful situation that happens to us. And what we say in our unconscious minds, out of awareness, but not out of operation, in our unconscious minds, we say to ourselves, oh, I'm not letting that happen again. And so we're so prepared. We're so prepared for something to go bad that sometimes, you know, we see it coming even if it's not there. Or we protect ourselves so much just to make sure it never happens again. And then it becomes like, oh, yeah, you can't trust people. Trust food, not people. And also ask yourself, what does it mean about the world? Because if you think that the world is an unfair, unsafe place, fundamentally unsafe, then that's a terrible world to live in. Then you're going to need comfort. Then you're going to need to hide in your home and just like cuddle up with ice cream. Because if the world is scary, you got to keep yourself safe. And then safety becomes fused with food. Remember why food and relationship and comfort are all, you know, bound up together in our psyche. So also look at your life experiences and identify, you know, what's going on that, or what are you expecting to happen based on the past. Next, ask yourself, what does it mean about the future? Because if you think, oh, nothing's ever going to go my way, I'm never going to meet anyone, I'm never going to get that good job, I'm never going to have the life I want, I'm never going to have enough money, there's no point in trying again, there's no point in trusting again, then you're hopeless. And hopelessness is unbearable. And comfort food can negate or temporarily negate or mollify that hopelessness. So acknowledging your disappointment and processing your underlying anxieties about your value, about your world, about other people, about the future, that is necessary to work through this. And then you can move forward. Like Carla, who, by the way, is now the proud owner of another house she liked even better than the first one. So you see, there you go. Everything worked out. When you work through the underlying emotions and conflicts that impact your sense of well-being, you make peace with yourself. When you do that, you make peace with food. Okay. Next, I want to talk about setting boundaries. This comes up a lot. I get a lot of questions about that. How do I say no to people? I feel so guilty to say no to people. And then I end up feeling bad, and then I end up eating. I hear this every week. At least one person is asking me, how do I set boundaries? How do I set boundaries? How do I say no? Because so often when we say no to people, we feel so guilty. We identify with them. We take their side. Oh, they're going to feel so bad. Instead of staying with our side. So if you often agree to do things you don't want to do, if you feel like you give in too easily, then I'm going to show you how to say no with more ease. So first, you got to identify why it is so tough to set boundaries with other people. Why is it so tough to say no? And here are some common reasons. First, you feel guilty, really guilty, as if it's somehow wrong to choose yourself. You feel like a burden, as if it's asking too much to choose what you want if someone else wants to do something different. You don't want to seem difficult. You don't want to seem like that difficult person, as if saying no makes you difficult, as if saying no makes you just too much trouble. You don't want to upset anyone, as if you're responsible for the feelings of others. You're afraid to hurt someone's feelings, as if what another person wants, thinks, or feels is more important than what you want, think, or feel. I'm going to pause there and answer this caller. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina. It's Brian from Chicago.
Brian from Chicago. Hello. It's been a long time. It's good to hear from you.
It has been. It's very good to be able to call in and chat with you briefly.
Well, briefly, so briefly, what's on your mind? How can I help you?
Well, so I just wanted to say congratulations. I understand you have a new book out, which I just ordered from Amazon and got a couple for my friends. But as I have
kind of talked about you in the past,
you're welcome. It's my pleasure. But I've spoken about you and your work to friends who I thought, you know, might be interested or might have questions about the areas that you work in. And one of the questions that I kind of anticipate is really just what makes your book different from other books out there that at least from the title or the cover or the back jacket description looks like they touch on the same things. So what causes your book to be different than those so I can kind of explain it to people?
Brian, I think you just dissed my book cover, but okay. First of all, thank you. My book is called The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, for those of you who don't know. And it's actually a great question. So do you think my book cover just looks like it's like an ordinary book? Is that what you're saying? See, everyone's insecure.
Oh, no.
I hear that and I'm like, what is he saying? What does he mean? Looks like everyone else's.
Huh? Well, you know, you should call into my radio show and we'll talk about this. No, I think your book cover is great. I just think that when people see things that talk about a cure or about anything that looks like it might pertain to diet or to weight or to body image, they might immediately think, oh, okay, well, I have a couple books like this already.
Right.
So it's just more of a general question. What makes yours different?
Okay. Thank you for clarifying. And I was kind of kidding, but kind of not. So thanks for bearing with me. Okay. So I think it's a great question. First of all, it is not a diet book. As you guys who are listening know, I am not about diets. What makes my work and my book so different is that this is the only book that helps you identify the hidden reasons you're turning to food. Those hidden reasons are in the unconscious. We don't know that we have thoughts and ideas and beliefs that we are not even aware of. That's what I use the weed and the root analogy. So the weeds are represent dieting and, you know, worrying about weight loss and all of the stuff that whatever problematic behaviors, those are the weeds. But they're not just there for no reason. They're there because there are roots that are growing them. And the roots are underground, which is analogous to our unconscious, the hidden parts of ourselves. So if we just pluck a weed, it grows back, right? You don't even have to be a gardener to figure that out. But if you get to the roots, it's gone for good. And so that's what I teach people to do, is go into the dark, hidden parts of ourselves, into the unconscious, and dig it out. And so I take all the principles that I have taught people over the last 18 years as a therapist, as a psychoanalyst, especially as a psychoanalyst, because it's all about the unconscious. And I teach them how to figure out what is going on, what root issues, what hidden issues are causing the behavior they don't like. And that's how you get rid of it for good.
So it's safe to say that a lot of the other books that are on the market that might look similar or sound like they might be somewhat similar, they're really kind of addressing sort of the crisis at hand, but they're not really addressing what went into form the crisis.
And again, I haven't read any book, all of the books, but, you know, as far as I know, I am the only psychoanalyst who has written a book on this subject. And just as I'm the only psychoanalyst who has a show like this or an online program like what I do. So I don't want to what makes my book stand out and what makes my work stand out is that I help you discover the parts of yourself that you don't know. Another way to put it is you can't fight an invisible army. You just get beaten up. But only by making the army visible, making the unconscious conscious, taking it out of taking these ideas, thoughts, beliefs, conflicts, emotions out of the dark and into the light, making them visible instead of invisible, then you can fight, Right? Then you know what you're fighting. You can't fight an invisible army. You can fight something that you see.
Okay. That makes total sense.
Yeah. And it's often disconcerting for people to realize that there are hidden parts of themselves. Like, look, to become a psychoanalyst, you've already got to be a licensed mental health professional. You've got to be a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a social worker, a psychotherapist, or a psychiatric nurse. You've already got to be licensed. But to become a psychoanalyst, you still have to go. Part of the training is to be in analysis. So, you know, even people who are mental health professionals still need to go into analysis 4 times a week to discover the hidden parts of themselves, right? So it's
okay.
It's just part.
So when you write about that potentially difficult journey, you write from experience. You've been through it.
Oh, I have so been through it. Absolutely. I know how disconcerting it is to realize, oh, wait, there are unconscious parts of me that are at odds with what I intellectually and rationally know. And that is why people get stuck. You know, that's why, especially with sabotage, I mean, in all areas, but especially sabotage, people who reach their goal weight or they get fit, and then suddenly, as they get close to their goal weight or maybe they reach it, then they just start eating again, or they give up their exercise program, or they can't sustain their progress. There's always a reason for sabotage. But if you don't know what the reason is because it's hidden from your conscious mind, what can you do about it? Nothing. Just go on another diet.
Other than just repeat it. Yeah,
exactly.
You just repeat it.
Exactly.
That makes sense. So the book, I'm imagining, because I haven't had a chance to read the book yet, I just ordered it, but I'm imagining that the book not only would give you this insight, but also kind of give you the confidence to go ahead and go there.
Well,
that, you know, because I would imagine this must be kind of scary for people.
And I break it down so it's not scary, and I give actionable steps on what to do. Like, so how do you figure it out? If you're not with me, well, now you have like a little, you know, pocket Dr. Nina. I guess you'd have to have a very big pocket, but it's like I help teach you, well, you know, how to without having to go into psychoanalysis 4 times a week for 5 years, how do you discover what is in the dark? How do you discover those roots? And that's what I help you do. And that's why I'm so excited about this book, because I think this is the most helpful piece of all to help people discover, you know, instead of focusing on what they're eating, why, and go way beyond what they consciously are aware of.
Well, that's actually kind of that really is sort of a hopeful way to look at it. And it's one that I'll certainly pass on to people because, you know, anybody who's ever tried a diet knows that usually that's not going to be your first attempt, and it's just going to be, you know, this up and down yo-yo pattern of I'm trying something, it didn't work, I'll try it again later, it worked, oh, I just backslid. So this seems much more designed to really kind of change your life, not just change your momentary bad habit or your momentary bad situation that you find yourself in.
Exactly. It's about changing your relationship to yourself and others and the world, which then changes your relationship to food. And the first step of my 7 steps is to ditch dieting, and I explain exactly why diets don't work in the long run, how they actually make you gain weight in the long run, and talk about and encourage people to not diet and give them other strategies of what to do instead. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm gonna lay this explanation out for people when I talk about your book.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for buying it and for buying, sounds like a couple of copies. And I really appreciate your support and your great question.
Keep writing. It's important for people. So absolutely keep at it.
I will, Brian. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Dr. Nina. Talk soon.
Okay. Bye-bye. So, see, even when Brian made the comment about my book looks like all the other books, where do I go? I go to, oh my God, what do you mean? We all have insecurities. We all get worried. I just want to normalize. Like, we're all human beings. We all have these thoughts. It's how we then respond to it. Right? It's like with couples. Everybody has arguments. If you don't argue every once in a while or have little disagreements, something's wrong, because people in relationship, friends, you know, there's always like a little something that's happening. Not always, but inevitably something happens. So it's not the fact of, say, getting in squabbles or fights. It's how you deal with it. So the same thing with when things in life come up and you get insecure, or you get worried, or you get scared, or you get anxious, or you get whatever it is, that's going to happen. You're going to get disappointed. You're going to get frustrated. You're going to get anxious. It's how you deal with those feelings that makes all the difference. When you could say, yeah, of course I felt that way. I get it. Who wouldn't feel this way in the situation? But you know what? I'm okay. It's all right. I'm grossly minimizing it, but when you respond to yourself, you don't react. Reaction is going to food to be like, I can't deal. I don't want to deal. It's self-abandonment. It's a frenemy. You're trying to help yourself, but you're hurting yourself too, because you're escaping it in the moment, but you're not actually soothing yourself. You're not resolving your feeling when you respond in words. Or reach out to a friend and have that person respond to you in words. Actually, you need to have both, ideally. Then you feel better. And then you don't need to use food for anything. You don't need to use food to cope. So thank you, Brian, for both talking about my book and helping me explain it, but also helping me model that, yes, everyone gets a little insecure and flustered and okay. All right, so how to say no to people. These are the different reasons for why it might be hard for you to say no. Afraid of hurting someone's feelings. Fearing rejection, as if people won't like you. They won't want to be your friend if you disappoint them. If you fear retaliation, as if people will reject you, hurt you, abandon you if you displease them. One of those likely resonates with you. So let me go over them again really quickly. Some of the reasons why it's hard to say no: you feel guilty, you feel like a burden, you don't want to seem difficult, you don't want to upset anyone, you don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, you're afraid of rejection, you fear retaliation. So what does this have to do with food? If you say yes when you really mean no, what happens to your resentment towards the person who's making the request? Even if it's no big deal request, or you just want to stay home and chill out, and your husband really, really wants to go out, and you're like, okay, I'll go out, because you don't want to upset your husband. But then what do you do with your upset feelings or your anxiety about doing something you don't want to do? When you don't express your emotions in words, or you don't attend to them, or you don't honor them, then you might turn to food for comfort or distraction. You might binge to symbolically get rid of your feelings. You might even restrict as a symbolic way to deny that you feel anything, right? You might be upset at yourself for your weight. So you avoid this by saying no when people ask you to do something you don't want to do, and by challenging the notion that they're going to retaliate, reject you. You've got to trust that if they're upset, maybe they'll say something to you. Maybe they won't be upset. Maybe they actually care about what you feel. And if they do reject you, if they do retaliate against you, if they do any of those things, then, is that person really a friend? Something to consider. And when you say no to other people or situations, you say yes to yourself. And that feels really good. So say yes to yourself when you say no to others. And it's okay sometimes to put yourself first. That's called self-care. And that, by the way, is the end of our show today. Thank you so much for joining me here on LA Talk Radio. I am here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific on the Dr. Nina Show. If you missed the show, you can also listen later on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or anywhere that you listen to podcasts. If you're interested in my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, it is now available on Amazon. And I thank you for joining me today, and I hope that you stay curious, not critical, about yourself and about what's going on with food. Remember that the key to changing your relationship to food is changing your relationship to yourself. So be good to yourself, and I'll see you next week.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.